It was incredible. We had a lot of people show up. It was on a huge screen, and it was a packed crowd, and just it was wonderful to meet so many people and to talk to them about the film, and they them showing their interest in the film and saying good things about it. It was a wonderful experience.
G'day and welcome everyone to episode number 58 of On The Step with That Mallard Guy. I'm your host, Dan Bolton. On The Step is all about float planes and flying boats. To get in contact with me, my email is thatmallardguy@hotmail.com, or you can follow me on Instagram and send me a message at thatmallardguy. On The Step is proudly brought to you by the Seaplane Pilots Association. From everything I have heard, the SPA have pulled off a great display at this year's EAA Air Venture. Thanks to so much effort from Steve and his team. Wish I was there, guys. The SPA are all about promoting and protecting seaplane flying all over the world by protecting waterways, educating flight crews about seaplane safety, and ensuring the public and regulators alike are well informed about what we do. So give them your support today by becoming an SPA member and join via the link in the show notes for a discounted yearly rate of only $49 a year. Don't forget, folks, that On The Step is on Patreon also. I want to say a big thanks to those supporters who have joined to support On The Step financially. It is greatly appreciated. I have another great review on Apple Podcasts as well the other day from thecrom.com in Australia, saying, "I have now worked my way through all episodes and can wholeheartedly say this podcast is essential listening for anybody interested in aviation and serious about seaplanes. Great work, Dan. Keep it up." Well, I'll try my hardest, crom.com, and thanks for the great review. Now, please, folks, if you haven't done so yet, jump on and leave me a written review of the show. It takes about a minute and inspires me to keep this podcast going into the future. Now, just before we jump into the show, I thought I'd share a little bit of what's been going on in my world at the moment. From those who follow me on Instagram, they would obviously know that I've recently got my hands on a Lake Buccaneer up in Darwin. This sweet little machine was recently brought by a friend of mine, a good friend, Ben, and I'm currently doing his hull endorsement when our schedules allow. For those in the States who probably don't realise, in Australia here we have two different seaplane ratings, a float plane and a flying boat rating, so I'm ticking off Ben's hull endorsement. Now, VH Lug, L-U-G, was owned previously by another Ben in the Sunny Coast, over there in near Brisbane there, and it features in some very cool videos online under the YouTube account The Flying Buccaneers. Ben took this aeroplane up along the coast many times, from Tasmania all the way to the Sunny Coast. They went on some crazy adventures, him and his wife Vicky. They were amazing to meet in the Sunny Coast when I picked the aeroplane up, so that was very cool. Before we took off from Gympie to start our trip over 2 days to get it back to Darwin, I was lucky enough to finally get to go flying with Kevin Bowe. Kevin he was the one who started Airwit Sunday Seaplanes back in 1973, I believe, coming up near 50 years now, and he started that business with Lake Buccaneers. So Kevin doesn't fly anymore. He came along just as wanted to come for a little flight. He lives near the Sunny Coast there, and we got to go out and take it for a little burn and have him show me a few little of the quirks of the Buccaneer, which was amazing. You know, Kevin used to be one of my idols when I worked at Airwit Sunday, so it was amazing to finally get to share the cockpit with him. Very special moment. But then, as I mentioned, there, a 2-day trip to bring it back to Darwin here. We went for about 9 hours the first day and still didn't leave Queensland. It was crazy. We overnighted in Mount Isa. I had a mate of mine, Josh. He came with me for the journey to keep me sane for the flight. There's not much to look at in the middle of Australia, especially in the middle of Queensland there. So that was very cool that he came on board. And we brought it back into Darwin the next day and got to take Ben out for a little flight on his new little toy, show him what he's purchased. And he absolutely loved it, couldn't get the smile off him. So yeah, it's very exciting. I'll be potentially doing some seaplane training in that in Darwin in the future, so watch this space as well. But on to today's guest. Now, for a while now, Instagram has been in awe of the content that's being produced by the account Flying Boat Film, but we didn't know what was it all about. You know, scenes of these albatrosses touching down in beautiful locations were getting us just so excited about a future movie coming to our screens on a topic we are all crazy in love with. Well, at Oshkosh Under the Stars this year, with the eyes of aircraft enthusiasts locked onto the big screen, the Flying Boat film was finally released. Now, on with me to talk about the film is the director and the producer, Dirk Braun. Let's clean our camera lens. Securing ourselves to the side of the chopper, we'll meet up with the Albatross in the air as we approach the tropical oceans of the West Coast. Hitting record will frame the aircraft perfectly as we capture it in its element, sliding along on the step.
Right engine is turning. 12% fuel. A light.
Alrighty, welcome to On the Step, Mr. Dirk Braun, director and producer of that world-famous Flying Boat film, the movie we've all been hanging out for. Dirk, welcome to On the Step, mate.
Thanks so much for having me, Daniel.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you on the show, mate. We've been trying to line this chat up for a while now, and I'm so pleased to kind of to get some of your very busy time locked in so we can have a chat and talk all about it. Obviously, the film's been out at Oshkosh, and I can't wait to hear about how that all went. And, you know, I'm still hanging out to see it myself here in Australia. We haven't had any release yet, but, you know, some exciting things might happen in the future. Who knows? But, mate, before we jump into all of the cool stuff talking about flying boats, I think, you know, myself and a lot of the listeners out there, we want to know a little bit more about who Dirk is. So, mate, can you kind of give us a bit of background about how you came to be where you are today?
Well, it's been a journey in the making. I've had an interest in aviation for a long time, and after discovering seaplanes, I became in awe of their capabilities. My friend Corey introduced me to the Albatross when I was 18, and it just never left me. And by coincidence, my father's friend who he met in kindergarten, Tom, who's been one of the protagonists in the film, he had an Albatross by chance. Wow. And was in the process of restoring it. And it was just totally by coincidence and just felt like it was meant to be. And after getting a voyage in his flying boat, I just knew that I had something there. He was he's articulate and eloquent about the subject. And as it just kept unfolding and I was interviewing and finding more about the subject, it just kept getting better and better.
Yeah. So are you a pilot yourself, mate? Or
I actually learned how to fly during the making of this film.
Okay.
And I got my license, so I've been enjoying flying a lot. I fly a Cessna.
Okay, nice. How old are you, mate?
I'm 35.
Yeah, you sound pretty young. That's awesome, bro. So obviously filmmaking, though, you know, you don't just kind of roll up and go, hey, this Albatross is awesome. You know, mind if I get my SLR out and we'll make a film about this? Like, there must be a bit of a filmmaking history with yourself, is there?
Yes. I went to school for cinema, and I graduated from there. I had a lifelong interest in film. I worked at a movie rental starting when I was 15 years old in high school, and I went on to study cinema in college, but I really learned how to make movies during the making of this film. And it started small, but I had big aspirations, and it just kept growing from there. And it started with a flight on an Albatross, and I filmed it kind of casually, and I made a little video, and I was so inspired by that flight, and it was just such a great experience that I decided to pursue this a little further. And it had been something that I've been kind of contemplating and thinking about for a long time. And after I got introduced to this world, I just kept going with it, and it started from shoot to shoot. You know, I had ideas for different shoots, and it would be trying to figure out how to make them happen. And it just kept evolving from there.
Is this film number one for you? And, like, you know, what are your plans, I guess, in the future with filmmaking?
It is my first film, and it's been a long run in the making, but it's such a good experience. And I hope to continue a life of aviation and filmmaking.
Yeah, nice. So you started actually flying, you know, yourself in the beginning of the film, the Flying Boat film.
Yep.
Where did that actually start? So, like, you had the flight in the Albatross. Did that inspire you before you thought about this film, or was it kind of like you kind of had the pilot obsession as you started doing the film?
You know, I've been interested in unique and capable machinery, and I deemed the Albatross the greatest adventure machine. And I was introduced to it from a friend when I was 18. And my interest in flying has grown over the years. It never left me. I always wanted to fly. I was going between Colorado and New York and Connecticut interviewing Tom and working with Tom at the beginning of this film. And he just one day said, it's time for you to learn how to fly. And he got me to solo. And it was just such an exciting experience. And I continued to get my license and trained her to get my license in Colorado at high altitudes. And I finally got it. And it was a great, great feeling.
yeah, absolutely. Did you do any seaplane flying in that time at all, or just land-based at the moment?
Just land-based as far as proper training, but I have a little bit of time behind an Albatross.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's a bit of a collection of Albatrosses in the States, isn't there? I mean, I've spoke to Michael Barksdale about the Zeus Albatross in Texas there and on the show previously, and, you know, there seems to be a nice collection of Albatrosses around America.
Definitely. Definitely the highest concentration in America, but that's still a small number. There are only give or take a dozen that are still flying in total around the world. Yeah. And I'm friends with Mike. I met him a while ago during the making of this film in Texas. And we did a 3 albatross shoot, which is just a rare occurrence. And that was one of the earlier shoots I did, and it was really exciting.
And yeah,
Mike knows a lot about this albatross and plane. I just saw him at Oshkosh. He came to the premiere. It was great to see him.
Tell us about like making the film. How do you go about, you know, you gave us a little bit of an intro there before about, you know, starting off with a simple shoot and then evolving as you go along. But how do you set up some of the shots for a film like this?
You know, it really depends. I mean, my mission with this film was to kind of have a wide variety of film style in it. And kind of transcend era and time. So it's anything from just kind of verite, off the cuff, casual shooting, filming in the right circumstances to as high production, best perfect shot I can think of. And it just depends on the mission for each shot, you know? And it also is always helpful to have luck on your side when you're counting on, you know, cameras working and airplanes working and the weather working in on your behalf. So all those things come into play. And if they all line up together, it all works out.
Was there some shots in there that you had to like kind of do a couple of times to be able to, you know, over a couple of days because the weather wasn't good or because the airplane was broken or anything like that?
There's been plenty of situations like that. I mean, there's been times when we've had to bail because of weather. And, you know, when that happens, I have to, you know, reschedule all kinds of crew and things like that and hope that I can pull it off again and try it again. I'm thankful that, you know, I have a set amount of goals as to what I wanted to accomplish and, you know, whatever it took to get there is what my effort was. So,
yeah.
I mean, some things came easier than others, and sometimes there was a real challenge to get the shot that we were looking for.
How many different like locations did you have to do for this film? Like I saw a few clips in the promo. You know, it looks like almost Bohemian waters versus then like some cities as well. So like, was there a few different locations you had to go to?
There were. We went to, I mean, dozens of locations. It was anything from me driving across the country by myself and shooting interviews to getting a crew together and doing more high production shoots. But I'd like to say I went to iconic and exotic locations. Iconic being the familiar skylines that we're used to that have a lot of history because this plane has a lot of history in itself, and that's the expression I was looking for. And then the exotic locations are where your dreams go, and that's where you imagine where you'd want to go with your albatross, and those are the far-flung places that only an albatross can take you to.
And I guess the owners of these albatross probably don't need any excuse to take them on a bit of an adventure, do they?
It's, you know, the albatross owners are, what's interesting and unique about them is they all have a shared passion for this machine, but they have different aspirations and ambitions as to why they're flying them. But they all know each other. They're exchanging their parts and getting each other type-rated and things like that. So they're all in communication with each other. But, you know, certain people want to go across the Arctic and go to cold experiences and really, you know, desolate places, and some people want to go to tropical locations, or, you know, it's to each his own when it comes to this thing. It can take you wherever your dream takes you.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, one of my questions at the end of my podcast episodes, you know, the splash and dash questionnaire, I talk about what would be a, you know, like a dream seaplane to like fly around the world in, for example. And a lot of the people who answer that pretty much say the Albatross. It comes up regularly. So do those owners of the aircraft agree with that? And do they ever use it in such a way?
Absolutely. I think the people who own an Albatross have it for that same that reason exactly. It's the most capable. I like to say it's the most diversely capable aircraft ever made. Been more places on Earth than any other machine. And it's kind of can do whatever you throw at it. It echoes the idea that you can do anything and go anywhere. And it's, you know, it can take off and land in open ocean and up to with huge seas and cross oceans as well, almost a 3,000-mile range. Mm-hmm. And it can pretty much haul anything you want to put in it. And it's a huge aircraft. It's 60 feet long, almost 100 feet wide, 25 feet high. And it was built with tremendous durability. And there hasn't been anything that's come close to it since.
The promo that I've seen for the film, you know, obviously focuses a lot on the Albatross, but it looks like you talk a lot about the history of flying boats as well. Can you kind of share a little bit about the history of flying boats from what you know of?
Sure. I mean, a good little brief of it is that flying boats were the first to pioneer long-distance travel. They did more than that before this. They've had a lot of different purposes in history, but Pan American Airlines pioneered long distance travel. They had flying boats commissioned, and they went across the Atlantic and the Pacific first. And with the influx in runways that were built during World War II, the flying boat became obsolete, and it was just a short-lived era. But it was nonetheless the most adventurous and most romantic. But the Albatross was the last aircraft used by Pan American Airlines for passenger travel. And although it's past, you know, post-flying boat era, it still has a lot of pedigree that stretches back to the early flying boats, and it's the last one that's being used today in as much magnitude.
The promo also kind of showed the graveyard, the boneyard of aircraft as well, sitting there. Is that a huge focus in the film, about talking about restoration of the Albatross?
Absolutely, both physically and thematically. And the boneyard is where a lot of the Albatrosses that are flying today, most of them were actually sitting for decades, and they were brought back to life by a few individuals who are still flying them. So what's unique and special about the Albatross is it served so many purposes. It was designed as an open ocean search and rescue machine to get down pilots. And it's also served as commercial air transport and research and exploration missions. And it's also now finally in the use of private hands, and the few who are using it to the most of their interests and their imaginations.
Yeah, that's really cool that they've gone there and restored them, because they are amazing machines. And it's great, you know, look at some of the mallards that are flying around. There's such limited numbers of mallards, but they're still out there flying private Definitely. Hands. Obviously, we're the only ones commercially operating them here in Australia. But
yep. We had a turbine goose, two albatrosses, and a mallard together at Oshkosh this year. It was awesome.
Yeah, right. Is that your first time at Oshkosh, or is there...
It was, actually, but yeah. Hopefully not my last. I don't think it will be.
No, exactly, yeah.
It was a wonderful place.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in a sec, I guess. So when did you finalize all of the editing, and when did you actually create what is now known as the Flying Boat film, and how do you come about with the release? I mean, I know, like, did COVID kind of stuff you up a little bit for how you wanted to get this out? Or is it really hard when you've created something like the film and then you can't get it out for a long time? Like, how's that all work?
I'm hoping it helps me out and plays in my favor. But, you know, COVID I stopped post-production for a little bit, and it was good to just take a step back and kind of think and contemplate what I've come up with and take a break from it and then revisit it. But it was finished officially, I guess, in the spring here. And yeah. Post-production was a long run. It was like at some point I realized I had enough footage and it was time to get into post-production, and started framing it and really diving into that. And then there are certain scenes I had to go back and reshoot and things like that. So it's been a long process, but yeah. The idea was that, you know, I paid special attention to every aspect of this film and wanted it to be the best I could possibly make it.
It must be so difficult to have, you know, something sitting there and putting so much effort into it for so long to then eventually see the, you know, the end game, you know, right at the end there. It must be pretty hard to kind of just, you must have a mountain of patience, mate.
It's been a roller coaster of emotions, you know, their highs and lows, just kind of like flying an airplane.
Absolutely. So tell us about, you know, when did the decision come to release it at Oshkosh? Was that always the plan? Like, was it, you know, that sounds like a pretty good idea to release a flying boat film at the world's biggest air show. Or did you have other plans and this just kind of came up and suited it?
It's been a hope of mine for a while, and I thought it would be the best place to premiere it. And it went so well. I'm so happy to have done it there. I mean, it's just such a passionate and great group of people. And it was just, it was humbling and it was wonderful to have it there.
Did you get a good turnout, was it?
It was incredible. We had a lot of people show up. It was on a huge screen and it was a packed crowd, and just, it was wonderful to meet so many people and to talk to them about the film and them showing their interest in the film and saying good things about it. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool, mate. And then what happened after that? Like, it must have been a huge high. And then, you know, what's the plans now? Are you releasing it at different locations, or how does it work with a pretty niche film like this?
I've got some good plans in the works right now. And I'll be sharing that very soon here, but, coming to a city near you.
Okay. Nice. Happy days. Hopefully to a country near me as well. Cause, we can't get to any other countries over in Australia at the moment, but,
it'll be coming to Australia. Definitely.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. What's the next big thing for you, mate? Obviously you probably want to finish your license and we'll get that, you know, ticked away. And, you know, is there other big films on the horizon for you?
I actually did finish my license. I've had it for a little while now, just about 2 years. Okay. So I've been enjoying flying, and that's been wonderful. As far as this film goes, there's plenty for me to do. I've got a book that I made. It's called Boneyard to Bahamas, and that's a photography book I'm going to get published soon. And I also created a fine art photography gallery. So I have, we were taking photos throughout the whole production of this film, and that's another piece of this whole project. So I've been excited about that, and we're going to do some gallery exhibitions and some film screenings and things like that. So I'm really looking forward to it, but flying boat is my life and that's what I've made it. So there's plenty to do.
My wife would resonate with that. She probably thinks that flying boats are my life as well. So I can understand that. what was probably the biggest highlight of making the film? Like, you must've seen some pretty cool things, you know, filming these aircraft through the air and going to certain locations. Do you have any highlights that you can share with us about, you know, some cool stories about going around and following some albatross everywhere?
There's so many countless great moments in the making of the film. I mean, it's just, you know, after you're dealing with adversities and challenges and things that are just keeping you down, when the stars align and I got the shot that I was looking for and it looks better than I could have imagined, it was just such a satisfying feeling. And the same thing happens when, you know, weather works in your favor, or when I'm in post-production in a room with no windows and a computer editing for hours with my editor, Alex, and we're sitting side by side and we get a scene together and it would just come together magically. And it was just, those moments are just wonderful and very satisfying. And so it just starts from, you know, one shot to one scene to the movie. And those, all those things are just so exciting to me. And as well as, I mean, I'm going back in time, but even in production and everything, when I'm just meeting the characters that I decide, I mean, I chose a certain few characters, and when I find one that just is so exuberant and excited about the subject and has a lot of great things to say and that are unique and pushing the story forward, that's just, it's so exciting to me. And it's just, that's what kept me going, is it just kept getting better and better, and the more effort I put in, the better it got.
You speak about characters there. I know you had Fantasy of Flight creator Kermit Weeks on as well. You probably couldn't get anyone more passionate about aircraft and flying boats as well on the show.
definitely. He's such a great guy to work with, and I appreciate all he had to say, and we enjoyed our time together, and he's so knowledgeable of the deeper meanings of flight and the history of flying boats and aviation and aircraft, and I love that he's keeping so many alive, and he's doing a lot of great things for aviation in general, and I really admire that, and I'm inspired by him.
Yeah, awesome stuff. Well, it's awesome to talk to you, mate, and you know, to hear these stories about the flying boat film. I know that, like myself and people who follow me and are interested in seaplanes, we've all been hanging out to kind of see what was happening with flying boat film. I know you had that bit of a pause there through the middle where, you know, posts were starting to be... Posts had got deleted on Instagram. We're all a bit worried. I had heaps of people asking me, what's going on with flying boat film? And I was just like, I don't know, but hopefully we'll be back soon. And there you are, finally, with the announcement. So it was great to have you back, mate. And really appreciate you taking some time out and to talk about your film on this podcast. And yeah, thanks for coming on The Step.
Thank you for the support and for having me on the show. And it's been a pleasure, Daniel. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, mate. And that's the show for today, folks. Thanks so much to Dirk for taking the time out of his busy schedule to come on the show. And for those of you just like me who are yet to see the film, I'll keep everyone updated in the future if I hear of release dates for countries such as Australia. And don't forget to review the show on Apple Podcasts, folks, and come along and show your support on Patreon if you love the show as well. I'm always looking for the next interview, so keep an eye out for when the next episode is going to be released. But until then, thanks for coming on The Step.